Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Kyle Dubas has been in place for less than a year. To some, that means he should be above or outside criticism. Don't know why. He did get paid for that year. There were some significant expectations from that year. Good morning to you. Good. Thursday morning. I'm Dan Kovacevic of DK Pittsburgh Sports, and this is Daily Shot of Penguins. It comes your way bright and early every weekday if you're into football and or baseball. I also offer daily shots of Steelers and Pirates that I hope you'll also check out. The Penguins are back on the ice for a practice today. That's at noon in Cranberry. And then they fly out to Dallas for a game against the Stars tomorrow night. And then they face the Avalanche. And yeah, I know. These aren't going to go well. I'm sorry. They're just not. In flying back myself yesterday from Newark, I put a lot of thought into the composition of this roster. It's funny, a week ago when I was in Ottawa, I put a lot of thought into the coaching, specifically the head coach. Not sure why, I just really went all in on seeing what Mike Sullivan does well, what he hasn't done well. This time around, I was focused a lot more, actually entirely, on the general manager. And I'm not going to lie to you here, and I'm not going to avoid criticism because it's only been a year. There's no need to do that. There's no cause to do that. A grace period or something like that would only apply if you're having a discussion or a debate about whether or not he should keep his job. I'm not calling for him to be fired. I think he's had a lousy year. I think that's a very fair observation to share. You're talking about a GM went and acquired seven pieces from the outside, who were on the NHL roster for at least half of this ongoing season. And of those seven pieces, the only one who's panned out, and he panned out really, really well, was Lars Eller. And I was telling you that last summer. Really trusted this guy. Don't listen to the way the advanced analytics people were panning him. This is a really sound, two-way, smart, leader-type player. He's been all of that and more with those 14 goals that he's already got. But look at the rest of it. I mean, we can, you know, go back and forth on Erik Karlsson. It's a really complicated case. I loved the way the trade for Karlsson was executed. That was really smart stuff. I don't love that Karlsson was brought here with neither the roster nor the strategy, and that's obviously on the coach, to succeed. It's as if they just parachuted him in from outer space and said, go get him, Carl. But the GM didn't get a single player who'd go to the net until Michael Bunting, way too late. And the coach couldn't get any of his guys, the existing guys, to go to the net. So the Karlsson thing just wasn't going to work. It was never going to work like that. Some of that has to be the domain of the GM. Riley Smith was supposed to be an upgrade over Jason Zucker. They have similar stats. He most definitely was not an upgrade. Zucker cares. Zucker flies around. Zucker is that guy, how did Sullivan put it last year, who is dragging this team into the fight. Smith most certainly wasn't doing that. Ryan Graves, I feel like at this point I could be picking on him by just mentioning him repeatedly, so I'm not going to do that. Really, really nice kid. You hate to see this happening to him. However, he has been very bad. And to sign him for 6 years at $27 million sets the stage for the worst contract in franchise history, twice as bad when it comes to money and commitment as that of Jack Johnson. Noel Achari, handed $2 million a year. Why? For 3 years. Why? What does he do? 4 goals. Kind of an ordinary defender. A kind of an ordinary physical presence because he's not fast enough to catch anybody to hit them. Kind of an ordinary penalty killer. There's just not much there. You wouldn't have paid, and that is for a fourth liner, a premium, to get this guy. The same applies to Matt Nieto, who costs half as much, and I'm going to be careful in talking about him because he's been out, obviously, all year long, or most of the year. But he had 1 goal in the 21 games that he dressed for. And he wasn't achieving much of anything on the PK himself other than occasionally he'd stand in front of a shot and block it. And that's just not, again, something that you pay a premium for. What you should have done with the fourth line, and stop me if you've heard me say this before, is get a bunch of kids who would just fly around and at least give you some energy, give you something. If you're not going to score, you might as well provide something. Jansen Harkins' waiver pickup kind of falls into a separate category, but not really. 43 games, 0 goals, because the one that he got in the shootout, that unforgettable shootout in Montreal, doesn't count in your regular statistics. It says a lot that all of these other players that Dubas had acquired, and there's 8 of them in the minor leagues who were brought in for those types of purposes, like the Vinny Hinestrozas and so forth, were supposed to be able to come up and help out the NHL. None of them did. None of them made an impact. Not one. Not one. So that's why you run Harkins out there night after night after night. Also, why you run Jeff Carter out there night after night after night. And I'm not saying that in being blind to the fact that he's got 9 goals and he's certainly been better than he was last season. But, you know, this needed to progress. You needed to get younger on these third and fourth lines, with the exception of Eller. And the one other place where I'll tap the hockey sticks in Dubas's direction is Alex Nedeljkovic. Now, I'm always telling you when I'm right. I don't tell you as often when I'm wrong, but whoa, was I wrong on this one. I told you guys last season I didn't like the depth at all that they were putting behind Tristan Jarry. I didn't like what Nedeljkovic brought to Detroit last season. And in my face, 904 save percentage as a backup. He's been just as good as Jarry, and that was a very good signing. However, overall, no, not good, not acceptable. This isn't Toronto. Expectations are higher around here. When we come back, J1Q. J1Q comes from Joel. It's a little longer than the norm, but it's worthwhile. Stick with this one. PK, I hear lots of people talking about Mike Sullivan's system and how it's been the same for years and how he hasn't made proper adjustments. I think these fans are flat out wrong. From what I can gather, his system has changed. I'm seeing a heavier emphasis on keeping numbers above the puck on the forecheck, being passive in the neutral zone, running a 1-2-2 in the neutral zone, and taking less risks in general. As you've mentioned a few times, there's a totally different focus on defending now that wasn't as prioritized in years before. My question for you, do you think this version of the Penguins should continue to attempt this defend at all costs and safe play style, or would it benefit the Penguins, especially the younger guys, to go back to a more run and gun style of play? Joel, I love the attention that you're paying to this. I love the fact that you bring up actual strategy stuff instead of just wagging a finger in the coach's face and saying, your system sucks, without having any actual attempt to find out what that system is. But I want to first share a couple of different views on some things that you expressed. I can tell you from talking strategy with Sullivan a lot, and I mean a lot, that he would take issue with some of your descriptions. They've never had a run-and-gun style under this coach. He has always emphasized keeping people above the puck. He's always emphasized making sure that anytime there's a pinch, there's somebody back covering. It doesn't always work. When it doesn't, the system gets exposed. And I would also take issue with, although you're correct that they've been more guarded about numbers above the puck, it really hasn't been so much on the forecheck as it has been once possession is clearly lost. And it also hasn't been a 1-2-2. It's been more of a clothesline. It's been more of a 3-2. All you have to do, and watch this, it's kind of funny to observe, but watch Gino, watch Evgeny Malkin backtracking through the neutral zone. It looks like he's trying to learn Swahili. It's so awkward. So there have been some things that have been done differently. I am not into abandoning a system that you as head coach feel is the one that you're going to need in the games that matter the most. Now, go right ahead and roll your eyes when I say that, because, oh, yeah, where was that system in Newark? Well, a system is on paper. It's theoretical. It has to be executed. And quite obviously, Sullivan's players weren't prepared to execute it at all in the opening minutes a couple nights ago. But if you're building if you're changing a system the way you're suggesting toward promoting, well, go get them, you children. Let's run and gun. Let's do whatever we can to make things more skill-friendly for, let's say, Valtteri Puustinen and Drew O'Connor, and who else really even is there when you're talking about the younger guys? What are you doing? You know, what's the purpose? I'd much rather see those players, those two specifically, become more complete, the way we've seen from DOC, and the way we're increasingly seeing, I'd say over the past few days, from Puustinen. And there's also the system to think of. And by that, I mean not the strategic system, but the organizational system, the system of prospects. I know there aren't many, but you do want to have a culture. You do want to build something so that when those players are in the AHL, like let's say, for example, Braden Jaeger, who has a reputation as being more of a two-way center than he is a pure offensive force. And that's great. That's going to make his ascent into the league that much shorter and smarter. But I don't want to take shortcuts with that. I want him to learn how to do things the way they're going to be done in Pittsburgh whenever the games do matter. I want the same thing for Owen Pickering when he gets to the AHL. If he's going to end up pinching in a Sullivan system, get him pinching now. Now, I get what you're saying, though. Your overall question, and I didn't mean to, you know, pick it apart as if I was trying to disrupt your case. You made valid points. I just wanted to kind of amend those. I appreciate the question. I appreciate everybody listening to Daily Shot of Penguins. We're going to do another one of these tomorrow.